Thank you, Liz. Ruth and I have Christian friends in Ukraine, and we have Christian friends in Russia. And you may also know people caught up in these countries. And some of you may be thinking, what on earth did we do to listen to a chapter like Habakkuk chapter 2? What on earth has that got to do with the price of fish? Habakkuk chapter 2 describes how those who trust in God respond when a superpower on its own initiative invades a country to take it over and to destroy it. We've been going through Habakkuk for the last two Sundays, and on this Sunday, this week of invasion, we come to see God's response when those who believe might is right act. And although you may feel, well, to be honest, I don't think I've ever looked at the book of Habakkuk in my life, and certainly not at chapter 2, I'm going to suggest that most people here, if they've been part of the Kirk at all, will know two verses well, and a third verse possibly. And one of the verses is a verse that we have to hold on to, because it states a principle of Christian faith. And one of the verses we have to hold on to because it is a promise for Christian living. And the final verse, if I remember to mention it, is a prayer. But let me start in a different place, and that's with something that Maggie mentioned. It's about choices. This week, a choice was made by President Putin. And in response, the choice has been made. Maybe you saw some of the images, an image that struck my wife, an 80-year-old man who's going off to fight for his country. People saying goodbye to their wives and children so that they can defend their land. Choices. In life, we make our choices. And our choices turn round and make us, many of the choices don't matter, what to have for breakfast, how to get to work. In my life, I think of the choice I made to follow Jesus Christ, the choice I made to become a minister, the choice I made to marry Ruth. And each of these three choices have shaped my life, and we've all made similar choices. Because choices matter, the Bible speaks to them often. And at the key points in the Old Testament, choices are held up before us. Moses, as he was about to leave the children of Israel in the desert, he said, I set before you life and death. Now choose life so that your children may live. And a generation later, Joshua, as he's about to leave the people of Israel, says, choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And at one of the most difficult periods for the whole history of Israel, when the nation was in danger of losing its whole identity, Elijah stands in front of the people on his own, and on the other side, 400 prophets of Baal. And he says to the people, how long are you going to go limping between two different opinions? If Baal is God, then follow him. But if the Lord is God, then follow him. And Jesus in his own ministry talked about a narrow way and a broad way, and the importance of choices and the consequences that come. And here is a situation in this little book of Habakkuk where the prophet has got a whole string of questions to God. He is despairing because the nation has lost its spiritual identity. It's lost its moral roots. It is drifting, and he's longing for God to raise up a godly leader to call the nation back to God. And instead, God said, what's going to happen is that the superpower, the newest kid on the block, the Babylonians, will come and invade the nation for their turning away from God. And here, Habakkuk finds himself completely speechless, for he has heard the stories of the Babylonians about their overwhelming manpower and their overwhelming military might. How then is he to respond? How are God's people to respond? And having engaged in dialogue in chapter 1, now he has to listen as the Lord speaks to him and helps him to know how to face the onslaught that is coming because of the evil that is found so often in the human heart. And he says, I want you to do three things. I want you, when you go up into your watchtower to wait me, I want you, first of all, to write down what I'm going to say. I suppose it's like taking a billboard and putting these kind of signs and these strap lines. He might have written, God cannot be marginalized. God has not passed his sell-by date. Take God seriously. You forget about him at your peril. Don't write it in code. Get people thinking whether God has any part or place in their lives. And then wait. Wait, because here, as so often in human history, what seems the obvious outcome is not the ultimate outcome. God will have the last word, but you have to wait for it. We aren't very good at patience. The Western prayer for patience is this: Lord, give me patience, and I want it right now. And sometimes it's so hard just to wait and to trust that in all that we know about God, that God has not turned his back on us yet. I'm sure, like me, you've been watching on your television screens or following in social media or reading in your newspapers or listening on your radio and wondering what will happen to that country when all the forces of NATO speak strong words but won't get involved, and for understandable reasons. But for the people who live in Kyiv, for the people who have homes and livelihoods and are overwhelmed, what then? And what Habakkuk needed to learn about the Babylonians, who were so irresistible, is that their day will come. That in the end, God will balance the scales of justice, and in the end, they will be destroyed. And he says, you need to see this enemy as I see them, and you need to respond by not losing sight of me. Whatever your choices that you make, and for some in Ukraine, the choice is to fight, and for some it is to flee, and for some it is to pray, and for some it is to hide, and for some it is to care, and for some it's a combination of all these things. Don't let whatever is in front of you make you lose hold of the God in whom you have trusted all your life. Many people in Ukraine have a Christian faith. And some of those I know in Ukraine, Oksana Kimmich, Gregory Stupek, have taught me about Christian faith as they stay there with their families. And in the midst of him exposing the empty, vacuous pomposity of mere power, there is a short phrase which you would miss if you didn't know it, where he talks about the response of the person of God in overwhelming circumstances. And it may not be war, it may be the invasion of illness into your home, the invasion of unemployment into your job, is this: The righteous person will live by faithfulness, or as we know it better, for it is a key verse in the New Testament, the just shall live by faith. That in the face of all the evidence, they will hang on to God and not give hope. What do you do when they are killing you? The just, says God to Habakkuk, will live by faith. What do you do when the enemy destroys your house? The just shall live by faith. What do you do when your loved one is taken into captivity and imprisoned? The just shall live by faith. It is this verse that is the key verse in Paul's great explanation of the gospel in the letter to the Romans. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God to save from beginning to last. Why? Because the just shall live by faith. Key verse in Romans, key verse in Galatians, key verse in Hebrews. It is this verse that changed a man whose name was Martin Luther. And this verse that then brought about what we call the Reformation. Martin Luther wrote, when he had stopped struggling to impress God and started putting all his hopes on God, he wrote this, when by the Spirit of God I understood these words, the just shall live by faith, then I felt born again like a new man. I entered through the open doors into the very paradise of God. Of course, none of that made sense to Habakkuk, not then. But he did know that what he was being asked to do was never to give up, never to lower his moral standards, never to lose sight of the spiritual connection that held him and his people to God. And what the rest of the chapter is about, and I'll bring it together as quickly as I can, is to say that in the DNA of an invading nation is always the seeds of their ultimate destruction. And as we face that, the just shall live by faith. When our prayers go unanswered, the just shall live by faith. When our dreams turn to ashes, the just shall live by faith. When there's trouble all around, you hold on to the fact that God is on the throne and the just shall live by faith. And no more is that more clearly evidenced for us as Christians than standing at the foot of the cross on Good Friday when evil has seemed utterly triumphant, when goodness is hanging dead on a cross, when God has been silenced. And 2 days later on Easter Day, God reversed the verdict. The rest of the chapter just shows how empty such invasions always are. Woe to him. 5 times he says, well, woe to him who pile up stolen golds. That's what the Babylonians like to do. They took the crops and the silver and the gold and the cattle. One day it will be taken from you. Woe, he says secondly, to those who build their houses by unjust gain. Babylon, this great empire, gloried in its walls, which were extraordinary, 100 foot high, 40 miles round the city. 3 chariots could ride abreast on the walls. They laughed at anyone who thought they would take it. And less than 100 years later, the king is having a feast, and on the wall a hand begins to write, you are weighed in the balance and found wanting. Many, many tekel parsim. And that night, the invading army diverted the river and walked under the city walls and took the city and executed the king. Woe, says the prophet, thirdly, to him who builds a city with bloodshed. Because that's not the final picture, which leads us not only to the principle that the just shall live by faith, but the great promise that the earth one day shall be filled with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. The final word does not lie with bloodshed or immorality or injustice or greed or power, but with the knowledge of the God who has loved us in Christ as the waters cover the earth. Yes, this earth that had no room for the Son of God, that mocked his words and doubted his character, that refused to believe he was the Messiah, that falsely accused him and preferred a guilty man to go free, that accused him of being in league with the devil, that beat him without mercy, that made him carry his cross, that crucified him and watched him die in agony, this earth will one day be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. And for those who lead others astray by getting them so intoxicated or addicted that their moral compass wavers, they will be in the end brought down, because finally they put their hope in idols that are vacuous and not in the God who is living. And so the prayer at the end is this: the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent about him. When this happened, Babylon looked invincible to those in Ukraine fighting courageously against an overwhelming force. To wait is hard. To despair is easy. To lose your equilibrium is natural. To doubt God is understandable. The world says, don't just stand there, do something. And God says, don't just do something, stand there. Well, we don't want to be on the wrong side of history, whether it's military forces or cultural forces or social forces. But in the end, if Jesus means anything, he means everything. And his way is the way of mercy and of grace and of love and of compassion and of giving dignity and worth and value to human beings, of treating them with respect, whoever they are, whatever their story. And the right side of history is always with God. I finish this way. When World War II broke out, one of the great London preachers preached in the book of Habakkuk. He talked about the need for people at a time of great uncertainty and a gathering cloud to reach out through the darkness and put their hand in the hand of God and to hold on, believing that in the end, light is stronger than darkness, and truth is stronger than lies. And at the end of that war, as Allied forces were making their way, they came to a farmhouse in which there lived a person who was a victim of the Holocaust. He'd scratched a Star of David on the wall before he was taken. And in rough lettering, he'd written this: I believe in the sun, even when it does not shine. I believe in love, even when it is not shown. I believe in God, even when he does not speak. As I care for my brothers and sisters in Ukraine, yes, and in Russia also, the prayer is that they'll hang on to God, and that God will hang on to them. Amen.